Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
This is chapter 23, The Color of Success. Miranda is a senior software programmer for a Fortune 500 company and earns a six-figure salary. She drives a luxury car, lives in a downtown condo just blocks from her job, eats out twice a day, and is always stylishly attired. 5'6" and attractive, Miranda maintains her trim 140-pound frame by exercising three times a week at the Pricey Health Club in her apartment building. Miranda avoids interacting with black copy clerks, messengers, and secretaries at her firm since she has nothing in common with them. She has a handful of black friends and associates, all Ivy League grads like herself, who work for other Fortune 500 firms. She attends most company functions and occasionally joins her white coworkers for happy hour at bars near their office. She dated a white consultant for a few weeks the previous year, but they went their separate ways after he said he wasn't looking for anything serious. She hasn't met anyone since and is dateless most weekend nights. Miranda has dated only a few black men over the last 15 years, but after one or two dates, they never called again, which led her to assume black women of her caliber intimidated black men. This was confirmed in her mind after one black jerk said at the end of their first and only date that if he wanted to date a white woman, he'd find a real one. Miranda took that as a compliment. If Mr. Wright turned out to be white, she was okay with that. The truth is, Miranda feels more comfortable around whites, which is why she lives in a predominantly white area. She grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood and attended predominantly white schools where she had been one of a handful of blacks. She hadn't stayed in touch with her black classmates and only occasionally wondered what had become of them. Although Miranda's Midwestern city is one of the most segregated cities in the nation, she swears she has never personally experienced racism. Except for the occasional white ignoramus who disliked blacks. Shoot, there were plenty of blacks she didn't like herself. She refuses to be manipulated by all that brother and sister crap blacks use as a crutch. All blacks have to do to overcome white misgivings and negative stereotypes was to be more prepared and work harder than their white peers. No, it wasn't fair, but life wasn't fair. It was just that simple. Either a person was up to the challenge, and if they weren't, they had no one to blame but the person in the mirror. If they succeeded, the rewards were well worth it. Her impressive career was proof. More proof was the retirement party 3 weeks ago for the black vice president of public affairs. The company bigwigs went all out for McCabe. A rented hotel ballroom, a catered five-course meal, a six-piece jazz band, balloons, and champagne. Miranda had never seen anyone, let alone a black man, get such a royal send-off. It definitely beat a 30-year pin from the post office. When Miranda announced to a small group at the retirement party that she was a proud, card-carrying Republican and had never once voted Democratic, she was secretly pleased by their surprised reactions. It was a prudent career move, she added, since the firm's biggest client was a staunch Republican. The truth was, Miranda despises being typecast as a black Democrat. She hated the patronizing way the Democrats threw out an occasional ham hock to get the black vote. Just what had Democrats done for black people like her lately? What was even more aggravating was the way the Republican Party ignored the thousands of blacks who thought the way she and Frank Kebro did. People who were educated, successful, intelligent, and understood the value of an unregulated, free market, free trade, and minimal government regulation. Her lifestyle and stock portfolio was living proof of how well it worked. When the firm eliminated an entire division last year, mostly blue-collar jobs, Miranda saw nothing wrong with it. Every company had the right to find cheap labor, even if that meant outsourcing jobs. Management had an obligation to maximize profits for the company and for the stockholders, like herself. Any workers who were displaced had to find new jobs. It was just that simple. On the day Miranda receives an outstanding job review, the firm announces plans to cut another 10,000 jobs to boost profitability. Since the firm employs over 61,000 workers worldwide, Miranda isn't too worried, but assumed the people junior to her should be. Miranda is the only black person in her department, but that small detail hardly causes a wrinkle in her powder-smooth forehead. After chatting with a human resource manager, a black woman she is only marginally friendly with, Miranda discovers that she is the only one in her department with a master's degree. It feels good to know her job is secure. Not that she ever doubted it for one second. Miranda feels appreciated at the firm, gets along well with her coworkers and boss, and always gets excellent performance reviews. She is confident they see her as an equal and valuable team member. The following Friday, pink slips are handed out in her department, and there is one with Miranda's name on it. Her entire department is being downsized, and the rumor is their jobs are being outsourced to India. No explanations or apologies were issued with the separation package that included 3 months' severance pay. Miranda packs her belongings in boxes under the watchful eyes of a security guard. She is furious, humiliated, and profoundly confused because she never saw the hammer coming. A few weeks after she was laid off, Miranda runs into one of her former co-workers, Beth, an accountant who still works for the firm. She tells Miranda that the programmers in Miranda's department had been transferred to other branches. Miranda is stunned. Why wasn't she offered a job when she had the most experience? And why didn't the sister in the human resources warn her? The look of pity on Beth's face stops Miranda cold before the questions slip out. Then Beth says something that catches Miranda completely by surprise. She says Miranda should file an EEOC suit against the firm. Two of the senior black accountants in Beth's area were laid off while she and three of the least experienced accountants were shuffled into different jobs. Miranda didn't ask if the three were white. She didn't have to. Beth was. 8 months after losing her job, Miranda is still unemployed. The few job offers she receives pay a third of what she used to make. Miranda refuses to consider them, but is too proud to pound the pavement for a new job, even after her unemployment benefits run out. Eventually, the headhunters stop calling. A year later, Miranda is still unemployed, 35 pounds overweight, and is taking medication for depression. Her savings are exhausted, and so she is forced to give up her condo and move back home to live with her bewildered parents. I'll stop there. As I said, many aspects of this book will not make you feel good, but I think all of this is in the effort of making sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen, understanding the reason this happens, the system of white supremacy, what we can do to correct that. Pam, do you want to give us your thoughts on this story? And give us your thoughts.
This story was based to some degree on a couple of stories that I had heard. In the Chicago area, there was a company called R.R. Donnelly, and I believe they were the ones that used to print up the yellow pages when they had these big yellow pages. And I remember this happening where they were going to shut down. I think they had two locations. They were going to shut down the location on the south side. And the south side of Chicago, a lot of black people live on the south side. And they were going to shut that down, the near south side. And it turned out that a lot of the white people that worked at that south side location were transferred or given opportunities to transfer to their other location, but the black employees weren't. And I believe there was a lawsuit about that. So this kind of thing happens all the time. I have a brother, he's my cousin's husband, master's degree. He's in an office with nothing but white people. They have a one-person layoff, and he's laid off, even though he had more experience and probably more education than some of his coworkers. I just found that was pretty interesting that they had a one-person layoff. They didn't fire him. They laid him off. So this is happening all over America. It's been happening. There's a reason people say first, last hired and first fired. That's been the history of black people working in white America. So I thought it was important because I also knew a person who was in her situation and thought the way she did. You know, he felt that he had grown up in a middle-class family, both parents, black man, and he felt that anybody could have done what he did. And so I asked him one day, are you telling me that if you had been born into a home where your mother was a crack addict, and you have been abandoned and neglected as a baby, that you'd be the same person you are today. And he told me, yes, he would. So it was little elements of that throughout the story. And, you know, just a whole bunch of stories. And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners right now that know people like Miranda. And so I just thought it was important to provide illustrations, you know, rather than just constantly write, provide illustrations that perhaps people can relate to. And I think we all know people like Miranda who grew up in these predominantly white environments or who, for whatever reason, are white identified and who have separated themselves from the black masses because of their education or their money or their car or their home. And I just, you know, I just thought it was important to let them know that it does not matter what you call yourself. It matters pretty much that you're in a system of white supremacy. And at any given time, they can pull the plug on you and your so-called career aspirations. And that's important for black people to, you know, we have to understand our true status in this situation, in this system, so that we can work to make changes to our status and our dependency. Oh, just one more thing I wanted to add. There was a supervisor. When I used to work for a corporate America, there was a supervisor, a black supervisor, the only black supervisor in our office. And his nickname was Smiley. And he used to smile all the time. And you paid attention, the white guys that worked under him, they didn't respect him at all. And I believe he retired. I left the company before he did, but it reminded me of that because during the time that I was there, one of the black males who was in the field got promoted to supervisor. And what happened, this is after I left, he got promoted to supervisor, and he was supposedly a well-liked person in our company. But the day he got promoted to supervisor, he came to work, I guess maybe that week after his promotion, the white supervisors had moved his desk out of his cubicle into the stockroom. And shortly after that, I believe maybe a year or so after that, he wound up getting fired. Now, he had been with the company like 15 years. But all of a sudden, now he's doing something to get himself fired. So there's, I mean, black people, there's a million stories. You know, I mean, we could all tell stories about what it's like to work in this environment.
The conclusion of that story, do you think that's accurate? The conclusion where she has, I think she's 35 pounds overweight. She's taking medication for depression. Do you think this is what can happen to some black people, that they are confused about racism, white supremacy, they're being mistreated? Do you think this is where it can go?
Absolutely. And again, I know somebody in that situation. He was the engineer with Motorola and making six figures and had a similar attitude. And when I guess this was about 10 years, almost 10 years ago. Well, she got laid off. I believe she got laid off when some people with less seniority didn't get laid off. And she went into a spiral where she never worked again. And she was an engineer. And I believe she had a master's. And she never worked again. And this is 10 years later. And she gained a lot of weight. And I believe she went through a psychological breakdown. And now her child, she was married at the time. Now she's divorced. And I believe her child now is in intense therapy because he tried to kill himself. But this actually happened to somebody that I know, that she went into a spiral. But I truly believe that when people get in those positions and they start to believe that they have made it and they start to believe that they did it, for whatever their belief is, they believe that they're in a position that is really, I won't say permanent, secure. And when that security goes away and they realize that they've been the victims of racism on top of everything else, I believe it crashes their world. Because they really didn't think they'd be in any, they really thought they had overcome it. And so I think that's the danger. And in the first book, we talk about the black. Well, we actually put that chapter in the second one, too, about the black identified black person who knows that they're vulnerable. And, yeah, here it is. The psychological opposite of the white identified black is the black identified black. The black identified individual sees the world as it really exists and does not blame black people for being victims of racism. Since they are not in denial about racism, they are seldom caught completely off guard because they keep their expectations at a reasonable and realistic level. This stand to getting along with whites in the workplace does not mean whites see blacks as their equals. This is why most black-identified blacks seldom pursue friendships or relationships with white coworkers to the relief of their white coworkers and rely on black males and females for their psychological, emotional, and romantic needs. Because we all know black people, and maybe some of us have been fired. But being black-identified, if we agree that that exists, you kind of knew it could always happen anyway. When you face racism at work, you kind of knew it could always happen anyway. So you're never caught completely off guard. You know, you're not in that twilight zone, in that delusional state of mind, where you actually start to believe that you're seen as a complete equal. You always know that you're not. And it doesn't matter if people smile in your face or not. If you really look closely and you pay attention, you can see beneath the mask many times by what people say, by how they act, by what they try to get you to say about other non-white people. You can see what time it is if you have your perspective. If you, according to Dr. Wells, if you're playing the right side of the chessboard, you're always expecting somebody to come out of left field or mistreat you.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, August 30th, 2018. So I have been told. We had massive technical interference, and I certainly do not claim to be a technical wizard, but frequently when I say on the program, I suspect racist interference. I'm not just saying that to be cute or funny. I really think, yeah, over the years, a decade now, we have had lots of deliberate racist interference. They canceled our broadcast in the middle of a live program once, in addition to us being thrown off the air repeatedly and the interference to our archives, just lots of things that, you know, are not strange occurrences. And I just think these are deliberate acts of racism. At any rate, I was not able to get the server connected as we were going live. That disrupted my ability. I really couldn't even listen to the audio as it was playing because I was trying to get the problem connected. We are still not connected to the live line. So if you would like to invest in the cows right now, you can message, use all of your social media platforms. You can do a little Instagram post and let folks know that we are broadcasting live, but they will have to call in, at least for the time being. The number is 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I will let folks know if their problem gets resolved as we proceed, but at least for the time being, you will have to call in to listen to the live program. The archives should be no problem. But for now, dial in if you would like to listen and or participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. This is our weekly caucus on workplace racism. Dial in if you would like to share thoughts, commentary, suggestions. Especially, you should dial in. You should be like the first person, really, to dial in. If you have any codification or thoughts on what non-white people can do to minimize issues happening to them in the workplace, to minimize the likelihood of them being the one that gets laid off, gets that pink slip for whatever reason, doesn't get that promotion. That's not you. You get the promotions, you get the raises, pink slips come out, they never have your name on it. You should be first one, dial in, give us tips, suggestions on how we can repeat your, I don't want to say success, but at least we can replicate your minimal conflict and being able to get constructive resources from whites in the workplace. The segment that you heard at the beginning, Pam the Great, that was her first time being a guest on the program back in the spring, late spring of 2011. This was the first time that she was on the program to discuss the second publication, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. That's the book that will be starting tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, narrated by some of the Cows investors, thankfully. But that'll be tomorrow that we start. That section that was that I read, I think it's a little bit later in the book, but very important right to what we are talking about right now, why I think this program is so important. I think many people if have not been in situations that are similar to what was described, certainly know other Black people where their experience sounds very similar to what Pam wrote about in Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. That's why we have this program, so that we can all be, and I think what she kept saying in that segment, to be more aware. I'm not going to be in a position, that's what we say on this program all the time, I'm not going to be stunned thinking that, oh, life is wonderful. These whites, if they are racist, they love me. And they're not going to mistreat me. I'm going to be taken care of. I'll be working here with Bill and Ted and Margaret until, you know, I'm ready to retire. Not thinking that way at all. We are not homies. We are not friends. Even if I do strategically plan to attend a lunch meeting here or there once every third week or whatever my ratio is, even then I'm doing so that, yep, I'm going out with the racists for lunch today. I'm going to be sober and prepared. Anyway, more from Pam the Great tomorrow. Book Club, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. From today, we had people that wrote in. There also was a very interesting report from KSDK. I know about KSDK because of Michael Brown Jr. White terrorism, St. Louis, Ferguson. Police department 4 years ago this very August. But that's how I know about KSDK. I just continue to use that as a site to check information. And they frequently have lots of information about how blacks in Missouri are being terrorized. Case in point, federal agency admits to years of racial discrimination. Call it white terrorism. My hope would be that more people that look like me have the opportunity to be employed. Direct quote. This was published on August 24th. They're one of the largest employers in the bi-state area, but now the government agency admits to years of white terrorism. A self-study ordered by the National Geospatial Agency revealed that their black employees have a harder time getting a promotion than the agency's white employees. And some former workers told Five on Your Side it's a problem that's been going on not for years, but for decades. For 8 years, Carla Green was a cartographer with the National Geospatial Agency. I photo interpreted photos and drew maps from that, said Green, who started at the agency in 1991. She said at first she felt like a company star who was quickly promoted up the ladder. But then Green said it just stopped. No matter the quality of her work, she noticed she wasn't advancing within the company. But she said plenty of her co-workers were. I would see other equivalent co-workers that started off at the same rank as I did, but then they were somehow promoted into a higher position, said Green. Curious, she would ask her supervisors for feedback. What is it that I need to do so that I can get to that spot? Great question. I-team, did you ever get an answer? No, said Green. And her experience perfectly echoes the findings in a study done by NGA itself. The topic, the state of black promotions within the agency. For example, the report confirmed that in 2014, the NGA did not promote any African Americans to the position of senior executive. The study also found that black employees were promoted less often than their peers. Not surprising. Why? The study found that some NGA supervisors had unconscious bias. I would insert the laugh track. It's always unconscious. They never get to the end of these and say, you know what? There were a few racists that work at NGA. They never say that every time. It's unconscious bias. Black employees also got less honest feedback, fewer networking opportunities, and less training. I think we've talked about that last one a lot on this here broadcast. Some people were unofficially mentored, and I wasn't sure how that went. Probably with the socializing, said Green. The study also identifies African-American employees were more concerned about being judged on their hallway file. That's a direct quote. An official assessment based on who they socialized with, their cultural fit, and personality. Does anybody else here have a hallway file? Anyone else here heard that term used before, your hallway file? Continuing. It was a constant consideration for Green. They would have social events like happy hours, and I would attend them, but I would always be cautious of my behavior. I think it was more of an issue for my African-American coworkers than it was consciously for my non-African-American coworkers. Do we mean whites? Said Green. Ultimately, the NGA said the goal of its study is to create a more diverse workforce. Heard that from caller in Florida. It's something Green is hopeful those who follow in her steps can experience at the agency. My hope would be that more people that look like me have the opportunity to be employed, said Green. I don't think the problem doesn't seem to be that they don't employ Negroes. The problem seems to be that they do not promote Negroes. She has a job there. She's employed there, Miss Green. The problem is that she's not being promoted like the other folks, the whites who work there. Continuing, NGA workers have filed more than 33 federal discrimination complaints reports against the agency since 2005. In a statement, the NGA said they're working to develop more networking and mentoring opportunities for minorities in the agency. The agency's Western regional headquarters have been near the Anheuser-Busch Brewery south of downtown, but a bigger, more modern facility is being built in North St. Louis. The agency employs more than 3,000 workers. Connecting the dots, very important within the system of white supremacy. I thought this report was very important as well. It's not Michael Brown Jr. That is not the problem, and his murder by enforcement officers, suspected race soldiers. That's not the problem. Even this is the same town where they were passing racist jokes in the Ferguson Municipal Court. Mary Ann Twitty, was that her name? If my memory is accurate, but they were making all the racist jokes about President Obama and some of the other Negroes, I think, calling them apes and such. It's not one isolated problem. When you begin to broaden your understanding, get the 10,000-foot view, if you will. Oh, this is what it means to be white. This is system of racism, white supremacy in all areas of people activities. This is not unconscious bias. This is dedication to white terrorism in the area of economics, labor. We're going to make sure, even if these niggers come here and do the best work we've ever seen in history, they make the best maps ever. Greatest cartographer in the history of man, woman, humans, you're going to be working at the same level for the next 20 decades. That's what the system, if anything, we'll steal your work and take credit for it, give you a mop or broom as your retirement gift as we boot you out just before you get your full pension. That is the system of white terrorism. And this report that you just heard from KSDK is not as glamorous, not as dramatic. It's not going to be any hashtags for black federal employees who are being shafted as cartographers. Not going to be any parades or rallies in Ferguson, I don't think. For them, it's the same thing. Exact same thing, just connecting the dots. But this is why I go to KSDK regularly now, Michael Brown Jr. and KMOV in St. Louis. I picked up multiple outlets to check information on white terrorism. With that, we did have people who wrote in about their own problems. We'll share that as we go. If I get the problem with the live connection corrected, I will update so that if you called in, you can listen online or what have you. Again, this is a time where you can invest in the cows without it having to be nickels. You can post online wherever you have social media and just let people know that we are broadcasting. But due to what I suspect is direct racist interference, for some reason, the live connection is not going out. So you can't listen on Black Talk Radio Network or tune in. You will have to call in directly. The number again is 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up. If we have any folks, what is it? Hallway file? Hallway file. That was the first time that I've heard that term before. Has anyone heard that term before? Certainly, if anyone has had that term used, where someone is saying that, hey, your hallway file is looking a little suspect, man. We didn't see you at the Christmas party. You weren't at the July 4th cookout with us, man. I don't know, man. You're gonna have to work on your hallway. Has anyone heard that term used before? Has anyone got a gleaming hallway file? You're at all the banquets and you socialize and hang out at the water cooler for just the right amount of time. Say hello to just the right people as you're passing folks by. Well, let us know if you have any thoughts on the report from KSDK, which I thought was fascinating. That would be grand. Certainly, if you have your own situation that you would like to touch on, that is always welcome. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
I'll be heard.
Greetings, Rob, in Wisconsin.
Sir, San Diego. So, can you hear me, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I have been hired at a job. I'm waiting for the schedule to come out. That should be the beginning part of next week. The person that hired me, is, proclaiming that he is a white person. When I interviewed with him, I do not believe he would be accepted white, by other white people. And I wonder if he is classified as a Hispanic white. He is married to a black female. And this married couple has adopted a African child and has one child of their own. I didn't hear the reports. I phoned in kind of late, but I just wanted to just give the update of my so-called progress. I know I've been very vocal about what's been going on. So I just wanted to call and to report that, and thank you for taking the call.
Appreciate that, Rob in Wisconsin. Well, no longer Wisconsin, Rob in San Diego now. Much obliged for the update. I guess let us know how you're progressing. If we have folks that are in the California area and you want to help Rob get adjusted, or anyone else, feel free. Let me know and I can pass along your information. If we have other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, guys. This is Dr. Mania. How are you this evening?
Right, poorly.
I fully identify Yeah, I suspected that you would have some interference by the white supremacists that tried to call in. I was listening on Black Talk, and then all of a sudden I was on the call, also on there, and the call just dropped. So, but let me just give a call back in. I just wanted to give you an update in regards to my situation. Monday or Tuesday, I went down to an appointment, and what I did first is I called, and I asked a question as to, you know, what I could do in regards to me being suspended or whatever, and they told me to just go ahead and file a claim. So I did get an opportunity to file for my unemployment claim, and I have to call in for it Sunday. I'm not sure if, you know, how you have to do your weekly reporting. Not sure if it's gonna, you know, if I'm gonna get it. Still hadn't heard what I had ended up calling the job to follow up to find out what was going on with the suspension. I was somewhat like given the run around. I was told that that the lady that was supposed to be getting back with me suspended, that she would be getting in contact with me, or the information would be passed on to her. To her that I called. I still hadn't heard anything back from them. I haven't gotten an email. I haven't gotten anything in regards to that. So as far as the laws or what have you, I guess I would just have to keep you guys posted as far as, you know, what's, the outcome of the situation. I thought I had a little part-time thing, but that fell through. It was something that was supposed to last for about 10 days. And that fell through. I just got a call this morning that they're going to be using their own services just to help out with some volunteer services at for one of these events they were going to have. But it was going to at least, you know, bring some income in. And that fell through earlier today. And there was another job that I was trying to work on and a career that I really wanted to get into that I'm certified for. And, you know, the racist suspect, I had suspected that she was kind of leading me on, making, you know, having me believe that I may be able to get the position. She never got back to me. And then when she did get to me, she said, well, you know, I don't want to make you think that I'm leading you on, but, you know, we're just waiting for funding. We might have this opening in the future at such and such place. So then I asked her about it maybe, I think, last week, and she said, oh, now they'll be getting probably in October, they'll be having the position open. And then this week I was told that, no, it may not be available to now. They don't have money or funding for it. So, you know, I kind of got the feeling that, you know, they kind of like to toy with your feelings or make you think, you know, kind of get you excited about something, and then, you know, it's just to play with you, you know. But as far as this job is concerned, at least you know, I'm doing what I need to do. I did call legal aid, but what happened, I had legal aid on the phone and the unemployment office at the same time, so unemployment answers quicker than legal aid, so maybe I'll get the answers that I need through the unemployment office as opposed to legal aid, but I still may follow that route also. And that's basically my follow-up, and that's all I have to really share. And it's always a pleasure hearing Pam's insight, and she is missed. And that's all I have, and thank you, Beth.
Indeed. Tomorrow, book club, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. We will get to hear lots more from Pam. Incidentally, and going back to something she said in the audio segment that I played today, something that we touch on regularly in terms of just having expectations that are in line with logic, with the fact that we are in a system of white supremacy racism. You can, or I'm a big advocate of not having real high expectations and thinking that whites are going to do right when they, you know, start talking about promotion or you're going to get this sort of raise if it's just verbal, if it's not in writing, until you have it written down. Yes, this is the promotion. This is your new salary. This is your new title or, you know, whatever it's going to be. When you have all of that information confirmed, then, okay, we can, you know, be happy or whatever it's going to be. But until then, oh, no, because exactly as was stated, whites, they adore doing that sort of thing to get us all excited and planning for this and thinking that we're doing well and moving on up. And then exactly as said, bam, to drop the hammer just to see you all disappointed and you had all these plans and high hopes. And nope, just be really, really disciplined about that in the workplace and really in any sort of situation where you are having to rely on whites to honor what they said. Wait till you have it in your hands, whatever's supposed to happen in writing. And even then, you know, still be good to have a little bit of paranoia, just system of racism. They are all about mistreating, harming non-white people, especially black people. Other folks who dialed in, if we've not heard from you at all, anyone, hallway file? Anyone heard that file term before? Hallway file. Get that in as well. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I just had, I guess, a couple of observations this week. I know I've been at this plantation. I guess I'm finally, I guess, out of, like, the probationary period, and I've noticed that, like, some of the white people who were hired around the same time that I was, because there's new positions that came out, and they immediately applied, even though I've seen, like, some of their, because, like, we can see kind of their, like their levels of like how they're doing, how well they're doing on the job. That's, we can actually see like everyone in the area. They let that be known to everyone. So, it's not like just a secret if you're like in a, on your team or group or whatever. So, I just thought that that was interesting. And I didn't hear that same thing from some of the non-whites and black people that were hired at the same time as I, and just, I guess, just maybe just observing just the confidence that whites immediately have whenever they go into a job, whether they are, you know, really good at the job or whether they're bad. Because I didn't even think to you know, apply for a different position, because I just assumed like, you know, I'm still, you know, too new, and there are other more seasoned people who might, you know, be applying, and just kind of measuring myself automatically up against them. But that was the one observation. The second one I had, I think it was last week or maybe the week before last, I had spoken about how there was a victim who was fired because they had joked around and said, oh, they were going to hit a suspected racist. And to this week, it was funny because I observed this white man, he was saying something to a victim. I guess he was supposed to, the victim had asked him for some help, and he had said, like, I guess when he was walking towards the victim, they're like, oh no, he's like, here he comes, kind of like just playing around, I guess, which shouldn't be doing, but almost like, you know, kind of giving him, like, the white man this I don't know, I don't really know how to describe it, but almost as if he was like, you know, the, I don't know, the warden, I guess, but not on that same level as like the caller from Florida. You know, he'll walk around, make sure, you know, if we aren't, you know, doing what we're supposed to be doing at like maybe like a quick enough pace, he'll come over. He's like one of the ones who'll, you know, come over to us, say, hey, you need to, you know, get back to, basically get back to work, basically. So when the victim had asked him for some help, he finally came over, and then somehow they joked around, and the white man had said something about going out to the parking lot, basically to kind of fight. But at least the victim, knowing just what happened, you know, just within, you know, the past couple of weeks with the, with that other victim who actually got fired, he was like, no, I don't, you know, I don't want to go out to the parking lot. I don't know, you know, anything about that. even though, like, this victim is, you know, I'm sure this, it wouldn't have gotten to that, but just kind of making sure that, you know, he still understood that they may joke around with you, especially something so recent, and, you know, not care, but at least the victim, he didn't, like, fall into that same trick. But I guess that's the only two observations I have this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, Red in Nevada. That white arrogance around, you know, hey, heck yeah, I've been here, you know, on the job 5 days and I'm ready to, you know, apply for vice president of the company. Like, I think we've had a few folks who've noted that before. In fact, and I'm saying arrogance because we've had some victims who reported that they've seen whites on their job. They went and applied for jobs they weren't even qualified for. Like, it had all of the prerequisites and everything listed, and they didn't even have the necessary qualifications for the job. And still, confidently, put their resume at the top of the list. Absolutely. I think I should get the job. Number one candidate, in fact. Like, that is the system of white terrorism. And the victim having the restraint, logic enough to not respond to being challenged, or even if it was in a joke, to, you know, let's go out to the parking lot and duke it out, or whatever it is. We said that all the time. You do not want to be joking, joshing around with whites on the job. At the best that I think could happen is a racist joke. I think that's the best, is that you get in a habit of playing around with them, and then whammo, they can call you a nigger or whatever it is. And, oh, we, you know, mess around all the time, brother. I thought, you know, we hang out here. We're like a family. That's about the best that could happen. The worst, you end up with somebody's testicles on you, fired. You say the same thing and get terminated. Or, I mean, nothing good can happen. You are not there. These are not your friends. These are not your family members. These are suspected race soldiers. Behave accordingly. The best thing that you can do is, as a black person, get a rep. Not, you don't want to be smiley on the job, as we heard from Pam. You want to be serious. You speak to everyone, you're courteous, but serious, professional. Don't do any of that horsing around. Serious. Stickler for the rules. I think I said that before. Stickler for the rules. That's the type of person, the type of reputation that you want to build on the job. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. The white supremacists will set you up if you don't have a consistent plan. What I would like to share, it's not so much of problems in the workplace, but it may be considered to be remedies for the problem of workplace racism. And I'm specifically talking about hiring a non-white black person or black persons to perform tasks. In this case, something that most people will consider to be important, the replacement of your roof of your residence. I'm in the process of employing a non-white black person specifically. And I'm kind of, I guess you can call it shopping around in the process. I interviewed a non-white black male this morning and relayed to him specifically that's one reason why I was seeking to hire him. Basically, he explained to me his process, his policy, his process. I would say the price is right. Normally, down here in South Florida, to have a roof replaced, it would cost anywhere around between $10,000 to $16,000 for the size home that I have. And he is actually, his fee is below $10,000. the only negative, potential negative that I see in listening to him, he mentioned about he doesn't have a contractor's license. He works for a company that's supposed to be black owned also, he said, and he also does work on his own. Even though he doesn't have a contract license, it's primarily, he says, because of, and I'm going to quote him, because of racism. He scored a particular score on a test. He took the test right, I think, right after he was recovering from either a stroke or a heart attack, one or two. I can't remember exactly which one. He's had both of them in his medical histories, he stated to me. And he was supposed to get the time to take the test again. And he was told that he would be allowed to do so. But his first name is Antonio, and they thought that he was a white person, I guess, he said, and until they found out he wasn't, and then they changed that idea about having to take the test again. I didn't bother to ask him why he didn't go ahead and pursue and try to take the test again, but nevertheless, that's the only obvious minus as far as in my evaluation. He took me around to several homes, at least three or four. All of the residents were there to see, you know, for me to observe his work and also ask some questions to the people who hired, past people who hired him. And all of them were overwhelmingly as a plus for him and his work. I'm going to interview at least one or two other potential non-white black roofers to get this job done, and then I'm going to make a decision. And that's my report for this week. Thank you.
Spectacular.
Also, I'm open. I am open for suggestions if anybody has any suggestions. Thank you.
Spectacular. I guess folks can let us know. That's certainly black entrepreneurship, something we talk about on the pride. And it would seem like, from the extensive report that he provided to you, thank you for sharing, that this black entrepreneur, carpenter, is experiencing some workplace racism. Once again, would seem to confirm just going into business for yourself, as they say, is not going to protect you from white terrorism. Federal black employee, work on roofs, whites are still going to terrorize and cause you all kinds of problems. And I suspect Thomason, New York, I don't want to be accused of what they call putting words in his mouth. That might be a form of white validation where you don't have that licensing from whites. You don't, you know, complete their paperwork, or you don't take the tests or whatever it is that they want you to do. So they say, oh, we're not going to give you, you know, the licensing to say that you did this, that, and the other. Maybe you could charge more money or, you know, have a little bit more prestige, another white star on your resume when you go out to market yourself because of racism, white supremacy. And I think a lot of black people have reported having a name that whites maybe got confused and thought, oh, this is not a Negro. And then a Negro showed up and that, you know, changed everything. I think we've heard a number of reports, and they've got a number of studies, probably a few libraries of reports on that phenomenon happening all over the world. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, let me just move away from the cello here. My son is playing. Good evening, Gus, and listeners and callers. A few things stood out to me today. One, the reading from the reading that you gave, the recording, was a cautionary tale, a great cautionary tale on how to expect the worst at all times at your job. Things are progressing at my job. Interestingly, I'm sort of gathering information, so I'll report on that when I get more information. I just wanted to comment on a few things that some of the callers have brought up. Rob in San Diego, with the quote-unquote Hispanic white, claiming that he was white. There is a white, I would call her a white female at my job, who actually, when I first met her, she started after I did. I did not think she was white. I thought she was non-white. But she said that she was white in this big proclamation. And so I treated her as though she was white. But she acts, and this is a very bizarre thing. I can't really describe it. She does not carry herself as though she is a white female. She carries herself as a non-white female would. I still treat her as a white female, but it's very bizarre. I suspect maybe there's some racial classification confusion that's been happening. They've been sort of pushing these Hispanics and quote-unquote Hispanics into various racial categories over the past couple of decades or so, and that may be the cause of that.
Wait a minute. Before you get to the news story, just on this suspected racist, I had two quick questions just for clarification. Yes. You said she made a proclamation of her status as white. Like, if we could get details, because I'm just trying, like, a software company, like, how does that was one. And then the second is you said that she carries herself like a non-white person. Like, what does that mean specifically? Like, what behaviors is she saying or doing specifically that you would say this is behaving like a functioning like a non-white person?
Okay. So to the first question, so she has started to look or whatever, and another white female decided that she was going to have a lunch with the girls. Okay. So there were four female developers at my job. Me, this quote-unquote Hispanic, the other white female who called me lunch, who was also quote-unquote Hispanic, but clearly white. She's Argentinian. She's clearly white. And another white female, blonde hair, blue-eyed female. Right. So I said, okay, I'll go to this one lunch. Now she tried to do it again, and I kind of figured out a way to get out of it. Anyway, so we're at this lunch, and there was a non-white so-called Asian male who had started with the female that I'm talking about. And he had quit all of a sudden, and he wrote this scathing Glassdoor review about the racism that he experienced at the company. And I was just listening, and I just, you know, I'm not really discussing it. And they're trying to get my view on it, of course, because I'm the nigger there. I'm not giving any information. She says, well, I wouldn't know because I'm white. Like that. And I was like, So I thought two things to myself at that point. A, you probably practice racism extensively. And B, white people don't believe that you're white. Some white people do not believe that you're white. If you have to proclaim it like that. I mean, I didn't see the other white females proclaiming that they're white because they know they're white. As far as the second thing, it's just the way she speaks and it's the way she responds to my codification. So generally when I'm dealing with white people and I deal with them as they are white, they're not surprised about that. It's the behavior, when you're codified, that behavior is correct behavior. So they're not surprised by it. They may try to, you know, talk to you every once in a while, try to be friendly with you, but after a while, they just sort of blow you off, right? They're just either they blow you off, they're not surprised, but she seems very confused by it. Almost like she's confused by why I would treat her as someone that I don't want to be associated with, don't want to be around. You know, I'm cordial, right? I'll say hello. But she seems very confused by that behavior when other white people are not. She's also engaging in conversations about work where she doesn't display a certain confidence. I don't really know how to explain this, but white females, they're usually fairly confident. They could be the most incompetent people in the world, but they are fairly confident about themselves and about their jobs and about everything else, just from being white. Just from being white and being white too. She doesn't have that. She's displayed some of the show-offism. You know, we're talking about Mr. Fuller, you know, showing off what we know or what we can do, what they allow us to do. She's done some of that. I don't really see white people doing that. So maybe that's, I don't know. I can't really describe it. Hopefully that helps.
Fascinating. Thank you for the clarification. You had newer updates.
Okay. Sorry about that. So the news story that you were reading and you commented that, you know, sometimes they'll keep you, I mean, they'll keep you in the same position. Sometimes they'll steal your work ideas or your work or your ideas or whatever and claim it for themselves. Non-white Filipino male, so-called Filipino male at my job, he recently experienced this about 2 years ago. He was talking about a part of the system that needed to be updated. It needed to be streamlined. He had an idea for it. He is architect level, but he's not being promoted to architect, of course. Yesterday, he tells me that about a week ago, they called him into a meeting, and they said they had decided that they're going to go ahead with this idea, and they gave the credit for the idea to a white male. So he's a little miffed about that. So that made me think about that. As far as the hallway file, I've never heard of that. I do have a couple other reports. I was walking into the break room to get something, to get some ice. And there were three white males in there, and this non-white, I guess so-called Indian, he, at this point, I found out he was sick. So I guess so-called Indian male. And he's a younger male. He's an intern at the company, and he really is, you can tell he's very white identified. There's one of the white males, one of the most overt racists in the building, was talking about how he was not allowed to play with secular children when he was a child. And this white male is Lutheran. And so basically secular meant anybody that wasn't Lutheran. And I turned and I said, what is your definition of secular? And he said, well, you know, it at that time it was just anybody who wasn't Lutheran. And I said, I don't believe that's Merriam-Webster's definition for a secular. And, you know, everybody started laughing. And so this white identified kid, you know, young man, all of a sudden he's been looking at his phone, he's not saying anything, but all of a sudden he starts mumbling under his breath about he's sick and does that make him sicker and everything else. So he seemed to get this confidence. And I was just thinking about how non-white, non-black people oftentimes get confidence from black people around them and from more codified black people especially. I've had that happen several times. And that's all I have. One more thing. Stickler for the rules. Yes, always be a stickler for the rules. White male came to my job on my team. He was pretty short. You're not supposed to wear shorts. I looked at him and I looked at my boss and I said, oh, we can wear shorts now? And my boss said, oh, no, we can't wear shorts. You need to go home and change. So that's all I have. I'll mute my line. Thank you.
They had that report on the Harvard Business Review, not the ignorant one where they were encouraging us to open up to race soldiers on the job, but the constructive report about the importance of asking questions. Oh, we can wear shorts on the job? Woo! Got my outfit ready to roll. Oh, no. Oh, okay. And I'm not even snitching. I'm just, you know, getting clear. I would like to wear shorts tomorrow. Like, hey, let us know. Maybe the policy. Oh, it didn't. Okay. Good to know. Asking questions, stickler for the rules. Amazing. And I've noted that same phenomenon when one non-white person, the grandsister, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, She said consistently, one thing that you can do is to not participate in non-constructive behavior yourself. You don't participate in the gossip. You don't participate in talking bad about other black people on the job. You don't throw trash downs doing the 10 stops. You don't throw trash down where black people live at. It can have a huge impact. Just having one black person being codified, one black person willing to ask a question. What do you mean when you say secular? Having one black person who is not afraid to question a white man, a white woman, who does not necessarily accept everything that they have to say with a chuckle, it can have a huge impact on other non-white people who are present, not even just the black people. So I've seen that consistently. So absolutely, black self-respect more powerful than a nuclear weapon, the grandcestor. Other folks that we've not heard from at all. If you, again, due to what I suspect is deliberate racist interference, we are not streaming live at Black Talk Radio Network nor tune in. So the only way that you can listen live is if you call in 641-715-3640, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Mr. Reed helped out as well and noted something was curious about all of the issues that we were having today, trying to get the broadcast rolling, but to be expected. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can you hear me, Gus?
Yes, sir. Right on cue. Mr.
Hello?
Reed. Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Yes, you are streaming. I'm streaming from my equipment. I have called in with the web, the voiceover IP phone that's on your account. So I am streaming it. So you are streaming and have been for the last 45 minutes. If you have time after you get off this program, if you can give me a call and, you know, I'll go over your software with you, see if we can resolve the issue or see if we can get you connected. Perhaps I have resolved the issue, but I am streaming the broadcast for you. I called in some real quick things to the firefighter. If a person doesn't have a license, it's possible they don't have insurance. And when you're talking about work on your home, you want to be careful about that. We had a pine tree that was like 5 feet from the back door of the house, started leaning. I'm surprised it didn't fall. Shopped around myself, looking for black people. Couldn't find anybody with any insurance. That's very dangerous work, being how close it was to the house. No, have to go with somebody with some insurance in case the tree falls on the house. So that's just something to be cognizant of in terms of the person you interview saying why they didn't get no license, why they don't have a license, whether it's racism or not. Obviously, I can't comment on that. But when we're talking about extensive work on our homes, we want to make sure those people have insurance or you can risk it. You know, it's up to the homeowner. I did hear, have heard, when I worked in corporate America, the term hallway file, that's nothing but gossip. That's what it is. It's an unofficial personnel file that usually is people in human resources, and they are listening to gossip about you. Things like, oh, this person might have bad breath or body odor, or they don't dress appropriately, or just, you know, things about them personally. But it's basically an unofficial personnel file that amounts to gossip. And how I got the term hallway file is hallway gossip. Like we're standing around the water cooler gossiping about people. So that's all that is. It's an unofficial personnel file. The other thing with the reporter who lost her job, because she shared something on social media about racism. This goes back to the last time we were talking about social media and workplace racism. Actually, even though I don't work for another company, I am thinking about taking a second job outside of Black Talk Media Project. Therefore, today I made my profile, my personal profile on Facebook, private, made all my backdated posts. Nobody can see them on Facebook. And I had it remove me from coming up any, my name coming up, my Facebook profile by my name coming up in any search engine searches on my name. So Facebook allows you to do that. I did that today. For a number of reasons, Facebook practiced racism. We see that the representative down there in Florida, DeSantis, was an administrator for a racist hate group on Facebook. So Mark Zuckerberg has already stated that he thinks racists should be allowed a space on Facebook. So that's another reason why I deactivated my personal profile, although I will keep publishing the programs and upcoming programs to our Facebook pages. But I'm done with it personally. I just made a post. If you need to contact me, my contact information is on blacktalkradionetwork.com, or you can contact me through BTR Community if you are a member. On the woman, though, her getting fired. It's interesting and quite hypocritical with Donald Trump, the way that he attacks the media and these people talking about freedom of the press and First Amendment and all of that. But isn't it interesting that reporters are not allowed, or their personal post that has their name on it, whether they're on Twitter or Facebook, that their employers monitor that? I don't know if people heard the news, but ESPN just bought out Jamil, however you pronounce her first name, Jamil Hill, a black woman who would make political commentary through her Twitter. Well, apparently that was the issue with ESPN, and they bought out her contract. And I thought she showed the utmost black self-respect in not curbing her behavior and expressing her First Amendment rights in speaking on politics and speaking on racism. So she accepted the buyout and said she will continue to speak her mind on the issues, the political issues, racial issues, like everybody else. But I just thought that's quite interesting and quite hypocritical that industry claims, oh, freedom of the press is one of the fundamental pillars of democracy, but yet you suppress the freedom of speech of your employees, particularly if they are non-white. I thought that was very, very interesting. I hope that the lady who was fired gets an attorney, and that attorney makes that argument that you violated her First Amendment speech. She's not on the job. I don't know the details. If you're not on the job, I feel like if you're in your home, off the job, off the print, you should be able to post whatever you want on your, of course, within reason, but you should be able to post what you want. Certainly share articles about whatever it is you want to share articles about, and they shouldn't hold that against you. But again, that comes in with the hallway file. Last thing, racial classifications lead to a lot of confusion. Hispanics, to what the codified software developer was talking about, Hispanics, I look at them like this. Hispanic first isn't a racial classification. It's a language. It says you come from a Spanish-speaking country. That's what that means. For anybody that's been around, quote unquote, Hispanic people, my daughters have two friends from high school that we still stay in touch with. They come by, they date other non-white. One of them is actually dating a black male. They have melanin. Okay. you can tell if somebody got some melanin or not. And I'm not talking about artificial melanin from sitting in the sun in a tanning booth or spraying on some, you know, paint, body paint or whatever it is that they do to color themselves. Non-white Hispanics usually identify themselves by their nationality, like Puerto Rican, or I'm Honduran, or I'm from Colombia. So it's not a racial classification. It's a designation for what language, what country you come from, and what language that you speak. But I look at their phenotype. If it look white, it is white. And thanks for taking my call.
Much obliged for the tech support, Mr. Reed, founder, Black Talk Radio Network, hard at work. In the commentary, definitely about the insurance piece, great question. If you're going to be having work done on your property, excellent point to nab. I don't, Mr. Retired Firefighter, he might have, you know, questioned about that himself. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The black female reporter that Mr. Reed referenced, I forgot her name, but we talked about this last week, and I actually have an audio segment that probably next week I will play, but that segment we talked about last week, great point. With all of that talk about the attacks on the press, she should be what they call the poster child for being fired for a tweet that she made on her own personal time. Wasn't cursing anybody out, just a report written by a white woman, no less. Not something rowdy, you know, not Malcolm X, not Khalid Muhammad. A white woman talking about white privilege, and she gets terminated. And she already had a what they call racial discrimination suit filed, so this would just be like stapled to that report addendum. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I'm just getting off the plantation myself here in California. I just had a question. I've noticed on my job how a lot of non-white, non-black, quote-unquote, Asian have higher positions. Yet I noticed a lot of them have trouble speaking or even reading in English. And I just wanted to pose that question. Has anyone else noticed that on their plantation job?
And you're talking so-called Asians specifically, being in a workplace setting and not being able to read English proficiently, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Has anyone noticed that? Is that a pattern in anyone's job environment or work history? I think there might be.
I noticed it when I was in college with a particular professor, and that was at a historical black college, quote unquote. And I've heard about it on other jobs also.
Was there another person who was going to respond?
May I be heard?
Heard you both. Oh, get the female caller.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'll be quick. I've noticed that, but not so much with quote unquote Asians. Maybe with like quote unquote people who speak Spanish. But I assume maybe that's a part of the conditional or temporary white status. And also, I've seen like in in different plantations where that's something to where they kind of put in their policies or whatever. You know, we can't kind of judge people on their limited English comprehension or something like that. But I feel like it's not so much for, you know, the racism that they've done against, like, you know, Black people who can't understand or can't, or maybe, like, you know, illiterate. It's more along the lines for maybe new immigrants. But that's what I've observed. Thank you.
Much obliged. The male caller who yielded the floor. Thank you. Oops. Oh, sorry about that, sir. There's a lot of background noise. I don't know if you could get to a spot that's a little quieter, maybe.
Yes, sorry about that.
Yes, sir.
Just answering Ken Steele's question, I do work in an environment that is definitely has that, where there are many people that classify themselves as Asian that they may not be able to speak English that well or even read it that great, but their roles are definitely higher than the majority of people that are in the office. And it's predominantly because the company was, even though it's an American company, a lot of its foundation is in Asia. So I think that's part of the reason why. So my situation may be a bit biased in itself because of the company's early beginnings. With that said, I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. I don't think that was Mr. Steele's question, but I think he is with us as well. Are there other folks who wanted to respond to that question before we start?
Can I be heard? May I be
heard? Heard both of you.
Codify something. I heard that's what's going
on. All right. Thank you, Ivy. No, I was just going to say, in IT, there are a lot of people who come over with H-1B visas. So, or come to this country with the so-called country with H-1B visas. So I have experienced that specifically from the area of the world they call India, where they do speak English, but it will be more of a British like English, and they will have certain idioms that are specific to that area of the world that they will use. But they're usually in some sort of managerial position because they're managing resources over in that area of the world. That's all I have. I'll mute my line.
Let's see, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers on the line. I actually kind of changed my mind about commenting, but I'll say it anyway. I changed my mind because I think I might be out of line here, but I guess I'm concerned about a question like that. Number one, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with workplace racism, and it seems like a question that could lead to people bashing other victims, and, you know, no one on this call has done that. But I just kind of seen questions like that can lead to that, and that's really all I had. And if I'm out of line, Gus, please, you know, let me know. And Codify Software Developer, I can't help but ask this question, but what did you guys was, I guess, exchanging with earlier? And that was it. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Well, I don't think anyone has quote-unquote bashed any non-white people. The question about, I think it was Asian specifically, being in the workplace and not being able to read correctly. What I would say is that might be true. I think at least a few people that we heard from, other people, you know, can give their response if they would like. But that might be true. I don't see any reason, you know, to doubt it, to say that they are not being truthful. Let's at least for argument's sake, let's say that it is true. And the reason I would say let's say that it is true, because we just heard in the same broadcast whites being promoted that were not qualified. I know that that's true. We just heard within the last week on the compensatory call-in them graduating black people to high school who could only read at a third grade level. That means they're getting to the 9th, 10th grade. They can only read at a third grade level. What I would conclude, again, connecting the dots, the grandcestor, what I would conclude, apparently racists have a habit of putting whites and even sometimes non-whites in positions where they are totally unqualified. And apparently they do this to strengthen the system of white supremacy. When it's to their advantage, yes, we will promote and have people in positions they are totally unqualified to be in. You could look to the White House. Some might say you could do that for, you know, generations, all the way back to yes, that is a big part of the system of racism, white supremacy. And I think if there's going to be frustration or anger about that, to make sure that the folks who are most to blame, very, very important. I think that's what happened thus far. Didn't seem like anybody was about to go strangle other victims about all this, but we shall see. Did anybody else want to answer that question?
Yes. Can I still be heard?
Mr. Reed.
I agree with you, Gus. And actually, I was, I observed a tweet from a non-white black person. There's a case involving Harvard where quote unquote Asians are suing, cause they're saying affirmative action, is discriminatory towards Asians. And the tone of the conversation was like being mad at the Asians. And I simply commented that racists are good at playing victims against each other. Racists are good at playing victims against each other. And I suggested that if we're talking about Harvard, Harvard has a very documented history of slavery. And therefore, if we're talking about black people wanting to get into this school, that I would make the argument not under affirmative action, but under reparations. Okay, let's pull it out from under, because non-white people, while Asians, Mexicans, Mexican Americans, Japanese Americans, Chinese Americans, did not go through slavery like black people did under Jim Crow. They were discriminated against. So I wouldn't even be making an affirmative action argument and being mad at some Asians because they being played. Jeff Sessions is the one who is stoking this, and he's now at the Justice Department, and he's siding with the Asians. So I'm like you, Gus. White people are to blame. Specifically, racists are to blame. And I think we need to be cognizant of how they play us against other groups, other victims. Thank you.
Founder, Black Talk Radio Network, Mr. Scotty Reed, much obliged. Anybody else want to respond to that question? Asians being in the workplace and not being proficient reading English? Perhaps we nabbed everyone on that question. Grand. Folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have commentary you would like to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Anybody heard?
Yes, sir.
Thanks for taking the call. I am driving, so if the background noise from driving is a little too loud, I can call in another week to share my experiences, but you tell me, is it too loud in the background there?
You are okay thus far.
Just wanted to quickly share a couple of incidences on the job. One is directly affected me, and one has nothing to do with me, but still appears to be racism on the job. The one that affected me directly, I participated in a conference of different different organizations under the same umbrella, had a representative from respective departments. And we would all meet up at a specific location, and everyone's traveling to meet at this location. And I don't know if it's because of any racism, but it appears that way. So again, you always kind of suspect little racism when things don't pan out the way that you expect or believe it should be. But let me just kind of proceed by saying, you know, in my email and Outlook, you're able to attach your photo so that people within your organization, if they receive emails from you or search your name, they're able to see your photo as well. So I did attach my photo, so if someone were to search my name or begin to type my name, they would see my picture of being a black person. So I don't know if that had anything to do with what I'm getting ready to share. So the meeting, there was organization of the meeting, and information was shared as far as the meeting place. It wasn't clear of where the meeting place was, but any of the communications kind of spelled out a particular location. And so we had to travel and had to get on the plane, and also I'm there at the hotel the night before. And by listening with the city council there, it really kind of helped me to kind of develop a little bit more of my code of trying to be there on time and trying to, you know, to appear, you know, timely and so on. So I look at the night before I go to sleep, I just want to make sure I'm being prepared and saying, okay, what location again? So the only communication that I saw was a specific location of where the meeting was to take place. I get there early before the meeting is to take place. I have to check in with security and everything else. So I get there, and you know, the security guard is asking, okay, you know, you have to pick up the phone before you can get through the door. And he's asking, okay, well, what's your name and what are you here for? And so I try to explain, and you know, you can't find any information of why I'm there. And well, what's your name? And you know, finally I start floating out different names of people that should be in charge of the meeting. And then he said, okay, well, come on in. And I get there, I see the list of names and all of everyone that's supposed to be present. And he says, well, you're the first one from your group. So I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of waiting around a little bit longer. And then finally I get an email from one of the organizers saying, hey, by the way, the meeting is not at this place. It's at this other location. And I'm like, okay, great. That wasn't clear to me where this other location, that it was going to be at this other location. So I plug in my GPS. It's about another 20 miles away out of town in another city. So I get there, and of course I'm late getting there, and everybody else is sitting there. Oh, by the way, I'm the only black one. All the others are white. There's one Asian, there's one Middle Eastern, but I'm the only black person. So I'm, of course, I'm walking in late now after the meeting had already taken place and organizers already presenting and all. And a little bit later on, I share my experience to a couple others. And then while we're at dinner, I share it again with another. And I hear the person who was communicating the details say, well, yeah, you know, we did have a change of the location. And by the way, the other location is the place we went at the second half of the day. And so I heard him say, well, yeah, there was a change in location. I emailed, copied everybody except for me. You know, he called my name out. And I'm like, how is it that my name got missed and everything else was, I'm carbon copied on everything else. But for the meeting change location, my name got missed. But everybody else got it. And I was like, that kind of made me scratch my head and go, I don't know, but I kind of suspect that something, you know, some type of racism was going on. I don't know. Another scenario that doesn't affect me directly, there's a woman that left the position. Another person came in, and I didn't know at the time that she was Puerto Rican. I thought she was white, you know, and it wasn't until later on talking with her in the break room. I found out that she was Puerto Rican. And not too much later, maybe about a couple months down the road, I don't see her anymore. And I'm like, okay, well, what happened to her? So I go on social media to try to see, look up her name. And I find her and I send an email or I send a chat to her. And so she, hey, what's happened? I haven't seen you in a while. What happened? Only, and the main reason why I was asking is because after I found out she was Puerto Rican, then I kind of suspected something, you know? So I said, okay, try to get out of her. What happened? And she just said, you know, things didn't work out and that was it. And then, you know, maybe about a month later, another person came in her place, and she was a black woman. Kind of slim, natural hair. And I noticed that whenever we had meetings, that whenever, you know, we would have to sit at tables and all and watch video or whatever the case may be, conferences and all, that whenever she sat down at the tables, that none of the white people really talked to her. You know, so I'm like, oh, goodness. You know, after listening to the cows and all, I'm like, this woman's going to start experiencing some racism from other women, other white women there. And I didn't really pull her aside and try to give her any heads up or anything because I, again, just don't know for sure. But I started to see that whenever we were meeting, no one really associated with her, no one really talked to her. And it wasn't until about 3 weeks or so later that she's gone. And then they brought in another person, another white person, a white male. And so I went back on social media and looked up the Puerto Rican again, lady, and said, hey, really, tell me what really happened, you know? And so she then started to share, well, you know, things wasn't really working out and I really wasn't getting along with the person who was training me, who was a white woman, and said that, that you know, whenever I would ask questions, she would really just get annoyed. And, you know, I could never really, you know, feel comfortable and really learn the things that I was supposed to learn. And I noticed, and I also heard that when the white male was being shown around and someone asked, I overheard someone ask, hey, what happened to the other person that was there? And I heard the white woman who does the training, the supervisor and all, say that, oh, well, you know, it just didn't work out. You know, it wasn't a good fit for them. And she said this specifically. We knew it wasn't going to be a good fit for them, you know. And then they just kind of continued on talking about other things. And so in the back of my mind, I'm saying, okay, there was a Puerto Rican. The person who was training is white. They got annoyed all the time whenever the Puerto Rican was asking questions. Didn't work out for them. Black person comes in. Black woman comes in. They knew that it wouldn't be a good fit for them, and the next thing you know, she's gone, and now the white man is in place now. So, again, just kind of makes you scratch your head and go, you know, maybe there's some racism going on with that white woman who's the supervisor there. So that was really my couple of things I wanted to share. I appreciate you letting me share that.
Much obliged. I know some people, you know, may pause with you seeing the black female being isolated, mistreated, not saying anything. And that's something we talked about on this program for a long time. Exactly what you said, following logic, can't be certain. Sometimes sharing information with other victims on the job can backfire and cause you problems. Unfortunately, we've had victims who have come on this broadcast and talk about that very multiple victims come on this program and talk about this very thing. So you just have to make the best decision for yourself that's logical for you at that time and move forward. Just do the best you can. But that's exactly what was in the KSDK report that they were doing to the black people in St. Louis. Poor training or no training at all and isolating them where they were missing out on opportunities and information and what have you. That's the exact standard operating procedure. Just getting a better understanding of how all of that works. I was thinking the question when the first incident that you talked about where the information for the meeting changed and you didn't get the updated information. You were the only person, in addition to being the only Negro, you were the only person who did not get the updated information about the meeting. I think a great question in those type of situations, when it's found out what the reason was behind all this, when they do the investigation and, oh, this is what it was, what can we do to make sure that this sort of thing never happens again? Question and see what they say, because though, and that's, you're not making an accusation, but this is serious. I mean, wow. Imagine, you know, this could have been anything that could have been really important. It was important what it was, but I mean, this could have been something even more significant than a luncheon or, you know, whatever it was. This sort of thing, you know, we want to make sure that this never happens again. What can we do to make sure that, you know, we take those steps and get a great answer on? I think that's a good question to ask in those type of situations. In addition to not being surprised, that was in Bamboozled, Spike Lee's film. I didn't see his latest flick, but Bamboozled, fantastic. Damon Wayans and Will Smith, so Jada Pinkett Smith, they have, that's at the, right at the beginning of the film. Same thing, the time of the meeting gets switched. He's the only black person present and he ends up being late. He fusses, and exactly what we just talked about, he fusses at his black secretary, Jada Pinkett Smith's character, and she's saying, how's it my fault? They didn't tell me. I'm not going to relay the information to you when they don't tell me. They're mistreating both of us and then have us fighting with each other. Beautifully illustrated in Bamboozled. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with a couple of experiences or observations, reports about the use of certain words, language. Like I noticed, it's been mentioned on the program about how white people will utilize certain words in the presence of black people, but that same word, they'll say it in a different way around more white saturated environments, or and there's a lot more white people in the environment. Like the word G-O-N-E, gone. Like, see, this girl or this woman, white woman, she says, she, and I think it's been a lot more white people using that particular word without the E at the end, G-O-N. So when they are responding to what a black person is saying, say, well, hey, well, she gonna be, he gonna be in trouble. But the person will say, well, she's going to be in trouble. They'll take off the word, either they'll say gonna or going to, or gone, like G-O-N. And I noticed, I picked up on this from two white women. And it's just that particular word, I noticed it kind of fluctuates. That's that first one I wanted to point out. The second one was, I was up in the judge's chambers in the JA. She was telling me how in the courtroom, she was discussing, well, not in the courtroom, but after one of the trials, she was speaking with the stenographer, the person who types out the dialogue or the speech at a rapid speed or whatever. And she said that, well, she was telling me that she was getting testimony. The person was typing their testimony from, I guess, a person who was accused of something. And she said, you never know what the person was trying to do. And she said the person used the word fitting to, or something like that, fixing to, or fitting to. That's what she said. The person said, and she was wondering, hey, what does that mean? Does that mean she was actively engaged in the crime? Like, you don't know what that means, because she was responding to an attorney, and they are that meticulous with even the most single words, like not even a whole sentence. She said that just that word might have been her trying to escape or elude a question, her saying fit enough. And this is a white woman saying this too. So I'd like that kind of was very interesting how she was having that conversation with this. I'm assuming it was a white person that does a stenographer job. Number three was the warden. She left the mail bins out in the waiting lobby. And I figure it was her that did this, because she tends to engage in these tacky racist acts when the other white man isn't there. So what he will do is he will drop off the bins near the desk that I'm at, because I'm not going to say my desk, the desk. The desk where I'm stationed, and he has no problem bringing the bins. But what I notice is that she won't come into any of the three doors in the department. It has three exits, and she doesn't walk through any of them. So she leaves these bins. So I asked the white coworkers, I'm like, you know, like, who left this here or whatever? Even though I knew who did it. It was like, well, hey, I don't know. Nobody said anything to us. I suspect they were lying to me. But just that's why I was saying I've been keeping a tally of how often she is going to walk through that door. And she is still at an absolute zero right now. But I don't know if she is or isn't walking through there when I'm not there, if I'm not at work on a particular day. The next one, number four, is that white man that I was talking about. He apparently, because I think he's on Facebook with someone that's at the office, and he made this post talking about he's going to sell everything in his house. He's selling the whole house. He said, hey, you know, the post was, time to move on. I'm selling everything. Does anybody know any realtors? So he hasn't been in the entire week. And it's being reported that, I don't know if he has some kind of nervous breakdown or some kind of mental issue. Somebody even said possibly like suicidal or whatever. I don't know. But I only was at work 3 days this week. So he apparently hasn't been into work. So I should be hearing an update on that next week. And I got a suggestion to go to a website called aggravated.com by a person on the phone. It was a customer. I don't know what it was about. I forgot to look up the site, aggravated.org, I meant. So I took it to the supervisor, and I said, what do you do when you get a customer asking you to go to a recommended site? And she was like, well, no, don't go. Don't get on the computer and do it or anything like that. You know, it could be spam or something. So she just looked it up while she was in there, actually. And she said it appeared to be a religious affiliated site or something like that, religious-related site. So I had never had that happen. And the last one is there was another customer that came in that spoke to the black female in front of me. And I think he was practicing racism, because the way we print out copies for customers, we'll write down on the slip. We have these cutout slips to show how much the person has to pay, and they have to take the slip and the copies out the door and to the right to the front counter. So he was saying, man, y'all are y'all are very trusting of people. Has anybody tried to, he asked her, has anybody tried to run off anything? And she was like, hey, you know, it's pretty much up to you or something like that. And he said it once again, yeah, you guys are very trusting, as he was walking to the door. And she said something like, well, you know, just take it to the front counter and you have a good day or whatever. And he says, oh, are you trying to say I'm trying to steal something? See, that deception, see, he brought it up. She never said anything about him wanting to steal anything or whatever. But that was what he had concluded with that interaction. So I'm thinking, yeah, he was practicing racism. And that's the only thing I have right now. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. I was thinking the so-called opioid epidemic, the white man who might be suicidal on your job might be another casualty of the opioid epidemic. Don't know. Will be interesting to see what further details you get on that one. I think it is just brilliant that you are continuing the tally of the folks who are walking by. I mean, just from that, just being able to get that information that she's this suspected race soldier is still at zero and not going by your area and adjusting her behavior to all of these irregularities, and then even maybe some Voltroning with the other whites conspiring to not rat out the fact that she is, you know, not not going through your area. The importance of words, talk about that on a regular basis. I'm not surprised that it was an attorney. That's who Mr. Fuller references pretty frequently when he's talking about words and how that's a big crux of the problem, or what we should be doing as counter-racists. Paying attention to words is he'll use examples of attorneys and saying that, hey, that's, they make all this money. A big part of it is words. That's their job, being meticulous, surgical with it. And he says, not even a sentence. We're talking about one word fitting. One word. Wait a minute. Something is wrong with one. That's something I point out on this program, because sometimes that's all it takes, is one word is awry and things are not correct here. Could be some deliberate racism here. Could be some deception going on here just on the basis of this one word. Words are that critical, as I would say, especially in the workplace. I'm going to pause here just to make sure that I get the written commentary in. I'll still make sure we get the other folks who called. So written commentary. Black female. She said, I just want to say, don't ever make the mistake of joining the workplace lottery. I don't really know what that is. Workplace lottery. I don't, if anybody clarifies, that would be great. Don't ever make the mistake of joining the workplace lottery or ever going along with your coworkers' jokes. Echo. I made the mistake of participating in the lottery once, and now they keep adding my name even when I did not sign up. My racist white coworker comes to me out of nowhere and says, you owe me money. I asked for what? She says, for the lottery. I state I didn't have the money. Is this like a lottery, like an internal thing, like the numbers racket that they do like on a city or state level? It sounds like they have that on a work, on a localized like work level, where there's some sort of bidding, you put in money to win. Like, there is no way. I can't even like fathom this. That's why I was saying I don't even know what this is. There is no way I would be doing anything where, I mean, who's holding the money that's going to be trusted? No way. I don't care what it is. If it's some sort of football, if they're doing like fantasy football and we're going to put a little bit of money in, no way. Absolutely not. I am not stickler for the rules, professional. I am not here to play game. What are we in, high school? I'm just here to work. Thank you, Kyle. Are we doing this on company time? Am I supposed to be doing this on, like, come on. Continuing. She says, for the lottery. I state I didn't have the money. The next day, she comes to me and states again, you owe me money. I asked, for what? She says, she bought my ticket, and now I owe her. I never signed my name on the list. She also has the nerve to say that I don't give her quarters or change when paying her back. I don't know what to do in this case. I mean, I don't know, when she says like paying her back, is this for the lottery? Is this for something else, like coffee or snacks or whatever else? There would be no financial transactions, like zero. Like, I don't care what it is. If they have cornbread for a nickel in the vending machine, I'll get it myself. Pecans for a penny, no thanks. I'll get it myself. Whatever it is, no, I'm good. Lexus's for a shilling, no thanks. I mean, I missed out. I don't have it. Oh, you'll loan me a nickel? No thanks. I just missed out. Lexus could have been mine. Oh, well. No transactions at all, and certainly none of these games or what have you for the lottery thing. That would be a simple one. Please remove my name from the lottery immediately. I want to discontinue my involvement with that entirely, permanently. I did not ask you to purchase me a ticket. I do not want to play any longer. Thank you. And hopefully that would be the end of that. It wouldn't be a long discussion. I just am not interested in playing anymore. It's not a discussion. I just don't want to play anymore. Please remove my name from this, so that way I don't owe anybody for any money. The other portion, I couldn't tell what that was. If there's, like I said, if it's coffee, if this is like a Starbucks thing or what have you, can invoke Thomason. Yeah, I'm protesting Starbucks. If you want to be just more low key, no, thank you. I don't need you to purchase anything for me. No financial transactions with the other whites on the job. Her report continues. My second issue, my coworker, who is beneath me in title, if titles are of any importance, has gotten comfortable giving me all her work with no repercussions. I came into work a few hours late the other day, and this racist woman actually waited for me to come in so she can give me all her work and her racist friend's work as well, since I was handed things that have nothing to do with me. This is work that could have been done in an hour tops. They all gathered around to lollygag, and I suspect say in their language, look at the good black girl doing the work, or something close to that, because they kept looking at me and saying, that's my girl. My racist white manager reinforces these people because they are the company snitch. How do I report this, or how can I report this to get them to leave me alone? I think I would go report that immediately. Why is it that these people, that particularly if they are beneath you, how is it that they are able to just reassign their duties and responsibilities to me? How does that happen? Am I going to get their compensation? You know, why are they even working here if I'm just going to do their work? How can this be? Like, that just, you know, I would just report that immediately and just continue to ask questions. And if I need to ask more white people, but it would just be continuing to ask questions, how is this supposed to work that they can just reassign their duties to me? Is this something that they can do every day? Why are they even here? If that's the case, then I can just get their paychecks and get all of their work and we can just proceed. Why are they even here if they're literally waiting for me to arrive to get their work done? But I would just, you know, immediately have questions about that to get that stopped, like pronto. Just be a matter of how many questions and which white people need to be asked to get this to stop. Can anyone tell me why white people have such a problem when a black person speaks another language? My coworkers get visibly upset. Not that I care about their feelings, but I become a bigger target for abuse when they notice me speaking another language they don't understand when I'm off the clock. I don't know what language you're speaking. It could be just the fact that you are coming across as an uppity Negro. If it's seeming like, oh, wow, we got, you know, this multilingual Negro who's all efficient. We dumped all this work on her And, you know, now she's got the audacity to sit out here and show off her that she's trying to even lean into being, you know, universal woman and not just speaking English. She can speak multiple languages. And who is she even talking to? Like, whites are not interested in seeing that at all. They want to hear us being ignorant, not thinking globally, not being global universal citizens. They don't want to see that at all amongst black people. So, I mean, it could be as simple as that. That's racist man, racist woman. Again, I wouldn't worry a whole lot about it. I would be cautious about having a whole lot of what they call personal conversations in earshot of whites because we are under surveillance. I had an audio clip that I was going to play on that today. I would be very mindful. I say that all the time. We're constantly being listened to, watched, surveilled by whites directly and indirectly on the job. So I would be very mindful now that you know they're listening and even hostile about you speaking and being bilingual or whatever it is, multilingual. I would maybe try to have those conversations in the phone. Maybe you can go outside, walk away from the building a little bit, but I would be very mindful of that, particularly if you're already sensing that whites are not responding well to this. With that, if folks have suggestions for listener who wrote in, or if you have your own commentary, anybody that we missed completely, if you have a hand up, you should go ahead and proceed now. Anybody that we missed totally?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
I would like to thank everyone for giving me their comment on my question. All of them are appreciated. To comment about the lottery thing, at my plantation, we have the same thing where they all pull their funds together to buy multiple lottery tickets in the hopes of winning it big. That's a metaphor, I apologize. I personally don't participate in that. I say I don't gamble. That's my excuse when it comes to them pulling their funds together to do that. And I'll mute my mind after that.
Awesome. That must be what it is. I'm ignorant. I don't do the lottery stuff either, but that must be what it is. They're doing some sort of company lottery ticket purchasing. Yeah, I would tell them immediately that, yeah, please discontinue me from the company lottery. I don't want to participate in that anymore. I cannot imagine participation in the company lottery is a condition of your employment. I don't know. Maybe that sort of thing goes in your hallway file if you drop out of the company lottery. But I would just courteously tell them that I'm going to immediately no longer be involved with that. Other folks, if we missed you completely, or if you have suggestions on what's been discussed thus far, proceed. Line should be open.
If no one goes, can I provide a suggestion about the lottery and the language thing?
Let's hear it read in Las Vegas.
So I know, like with the lottery, I know like when I was back in Ohio, they would be like, in Ohio, they have a lottery. There's not one in Nevada. But one thing that I've noticed with some of the plantations out in Ohio, they would allow you to participate, like do some type of gambling thing. I know they had like fantasy football pools and stuff like that, where you put your name on a square and something about, I don't know, I don't watch football. But that was actually something that was okayed by the company. But there are other plantations. I know there are some out here where you cannot gamble at all. So I would definitely suggest that the female maybe look at her policies and procedures, because I have actually looked at different policies and procedures and seen, you know, no type of gambling at all, even if it is, you know, fantasy football or whatever. I think even with this current plantation that I'm on, they sent out a reminder email with football season coming up. They're like, no, there are no fantasy football pools or anything like that to be discussed on company property or whatever, but I still hear victims discussing it anyway, but not necessarily at the level of they're actually taking down bets. So that's the first thing about the lottery. And then also, so maybe that might be a way for her to get out of it. Just saying, you know what, this is against company policy. About the whole change thing. And I feel like I don't think I've been in this situation, but other victims who have like coworkers, they, you know, just very frankly say, you know what, I didn't you know, tell you that I'm a part of this pool, so I don't owe you anything. You know, that was your extra ticket that you bought for yourself. So good luck, something like that, if you wanted to be kind of, smart aleck. And then with the language thing, I wouldn't assume that whites don't know the language, because whites, they now have so many different tools to where even if they don't really, if they can't find out, you know, immediately what language it is, they can always, you know, somehow gather that information, because I feel like, you know, I definitely agree with Gus, maybe trying to, if you have to go out to your car and have the, you know, the conversation in a different language. But because I know that whites, they don't really see like Spanish as being too bad. I'm assuming they have enough information about, you know, they could speak Spanish, but if it's something else, they can always find out. So I wouldn't just assume that they don't know. But that's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Much obliged, Red in Las Vegas. I'm just remembering that I have heard enough examples of Black people being in work situations where with something totally extracurricular, like a birthday party, lottery tickets, something not anything, just something nonsense that is not related to, you know, what we are supposed to be here for. And the Black person wasn't present. The Black person didn't say, you know, hey, Joni, I'm not going to be at the meeting this evening, you know, where we're getting our group Super Bowl tickets. Go ahead and, you know, get a ticket for me. Go ahead and put in $100 for me. Like, that was not said. That was not discussed. Somehow the white person took it upon themselves to say, oh, yeah, I went ahead and contributed $20 for you, or signed you up for, you know, $50 contributing to get Michelle a new gym membership. Literally, like I've heard listeners, you know, who have said exactly those type of things with the expectation that you're going to pay this money back. You're going to refund me or whoever it is, this $50, $20 or whatever it is. That's got to be like bedrock code. Like, absolutely not. I don't care what the amount is. That's not the point at all. I've seen this too many times where this just needs to be code, because I think this is one of those where racists, it's like they're testing you, as they say in, I think, street lingo, just trying to see what they can do to get over on you and mistreating you. The like reflexive code. Absolutely not. I did not tell anyone. We didn't have a conversation. I didn't authorize them to sign me up to purchase anything, that I was going to contribute X amount of dollars. I don't care if it's a nickel. I don't care if it's a pecan. Absolutely not. I am not paying anything back. I did not authorize this. Who did I tell? Absolutely not. No way. And sorry for any confusion, but yeah, I don't even participate in it. Known for being professional. Now, I don't even participate in this sort of thing. So yeah, absolutely not. Birthday party. That's one that I heard from listeners. We automatically assumed that you would want to contribute $20 for such and it was some white person's going away present. Absolutely not. I'm hurting. I'm struggling. I don't have money. I was about to ask you if you could loan me $20. Like, absolutely not. I did not authorize or tell anyone that I was going to contribute funds to that. Would love to do it, but I don't have the funds to spare. Be extreme when a retired firefighter, when he says be explicit, direct, that's one. I mean, direct. And I wouldn't even say as much as I've said now. It would be as few sentences as possible. Any other folks that we missed?
Gus, may I add one?
Oh, Red.
I'm sorry. Can I just have one other thing to add, maybe even a question, because I know with these, I know like I've heard this happening before where whites will bring up different other companies where they'll have these lottery pools and the people actually win, which is, you know, a drop in the bucket, I'm sure, compared to how many times these lottery pools happen. But also, I would even, if you did want to ask, if the you know, the listener did want to ask the question, like, well, would you be asking me for the money if you all had won? If they had won, you know, the Mega Millions, would she then go back to her and say, oh, I bought you a ticket? That's also something to think about, too. Maybe she's just trying to recuperate her her losses. And I'll mute my line this time, I promise. Thank you.
Great point. Great point. Any other folks that we've missed have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus. I just wanted to quickly say, I have a suggestion as far as the lottery thing, that to me, that is harassment when you have not, for lack of words, put in for the lottery or whatever, and they sign you up for it, and then they're going to come to you and demand money from you from something that you did not authorize. That's harassment. And you could, you know, ask the question, you know, like, why are you harassing me? And use that language. That language could possibly, it could possibly be powerful and intimidating. I don't know who the person is that, you know, I don't know what position this person holds who's doing this harassment, but to me, that is harassment. I find that to be harassment. And that was it. I'll mute my line.
Absolutely. Language, words, that's the exact type of language that I would use, that, you know, this harassment, extortion, it's a shakedown to come. I didn't sign up for this to come. And I mean, I'm being very serious. I would be courteous. But I mean, if there's any sort of persistence and, you know, you owe me these amount of funds or you're supposed to contribute, like, yeah, what kind of shakedown is this? I did not tell anybody. I did not promise that I was going to contribute these funds. I didn't sign up for any of this. If anyone can present evidence that I did so, please do. But otherwise, yeah, this is just total extortion for what a pecan. I don't care what the amount is. This is too regular. This is one I've seen too consistently from race soldiers. Other folks we've not heard from?
Have you heard?
Thomas in New York.
Good evening, Gus. You know, the lottery ticket concept, to buy them in bulk, it's a logical idea. However, I've had jobs where I have participated in it, actually, like the hospital where we was all non-white, you know what I'm saying? We tried to get up out the hospital, you know what I mean? So it was like, we got a better chance at winning tonight, and it only would happen when the Mega Millions would go up to like 500 million, you know, and we figure, hey, we get like 50 tickets, you know, 100 tickets, we might have a chance. So it's, you know, we could all leave them at the same time, and, you know, like that type of mentality. However, I have had jobs where white people have asked me to participate, and as you know, I do not participate in too much with white people. My general comment to them is, I'm very unlucky. If you want to win, I wouldn't ask me to sign up. And they generally take that for face value. Football pools. They had one tonight at work. I was wondering why all the people that are usually in a rush to leave and they just push their work off on me were still at work when I was leaving. And I said, what are y'all doing here? And they was like, oh, tonight you're not playing? I'm like, playing what? A football pool. You know, I'm trying to get the first pick. Who do you think I should get? I said, oh, I haven't watched football in years. So I don't know. See y'all tomorrow. And that was pretty much how that ended. I've also had jobs where they had susus. I was at Citicorp. I'm talking. I was like 19, and they had this susu, and they were trying to get me involved. But you know, I just had a bad feeling, so I didn't do it. And a few of my coworkers were all involved in the susu, and then one of the guys just left. And it messed everybody up. It was just like, you know, and then there was a big argument, and it just turned into this whole thing, and I was so glad I wasn't involved. But that's one of those things where all the coworkers might take $100 out the check, each check, or 200, however they put it together, and all that would go to one person. So they'll have all that money at one time, and then for the duration of the period of the susu, that person will have to put the $100 in every week. And that, to me, just that's where I felt like, once I get this dude this money, this guy gets his, I think it was like $10,000, you know, then he's going to just, in about, you know, 5-6 months, he ain't going to want to keep putting $100 in every week, and he's not going to get nothing out of it, you know what I'm saying? So it just didn't seem logical to me. But, you know, I've heard that working for some people. At my job, I was called a boy one day. You know, I had to do something for this, racist, older white racist who would be classified as Jewish. That's how he is allowed to classify himself. He picked something up. And he's like, man, you're a strong boy. And I said, you know, excuse me. He said, oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. That came out totally wrong. You're a young man, you know, and I apologize for that. So, you know, recently, just last week or so, I go and I did something for this gentleman. And he says, again, man, good boy. And then he, again, oh, I apologize. So I said, you know, not ignorant. Understood what he was, you know, caught his slip up, or it probably wasn't a slip up. You know, I don't try to figure it out with them. Called an animal today by a suspected racist I forget the context in which he said it, but again, immediately, we're all animals, you know, don't take it personal, you know, understood. And this lady's from France. Now this French lady, annoying, always in my space. I guess Europeans get real close when they talk to you, and you know she smells like a old French lady. So it's annoying, but however, she confides in me. Her enemy is my terrorist, she. You know, one day came and said how much she can't stand her and, pretty much told me some of the things that was done to her. And I'm sitting there trying to keep a straight face like, oh, my gosh. And as soon as she walked away, I called the black receptionist over like, get over here. And so guess what she just said? We just had the biggest laugh because, you know, it was like, I guess she do it to everybody. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, she's being terrorized by the lady, but that's white on white terrorism. So that doesn't really count. But she confides in me and tells me some of these things, and she, you know, I don't trust her. So I just, hey, bonjour, see you later. They're giving me $150, you know, well, they're giving me the company card, and I have to walk to the supermarket, which is a block and a half away, and buy $150 worth of ice cream. Man, this has been such a everyday. It's like a different attitude you walk into with my terrorist. You know, why didn't you get this? Why didn't you get that? I'm like, you know, I'm buying the whole shelf. I might as well just rub my arm across it and take it off. But I, these Häagen-Dazs bars, they have to have a stick or a Magnum bar or Dove bars with the stick and all different flavors. And then I get emails from partners. Oh, I want this particular one. And, you know, if I get that, she's, why did you get that? It's becoming like, man, and this ice cream gets bought on days over 90 degrees. So I can't wait for it to get cold. So I don't have to deal with this ice cream. It's just becoming a hassle. Cutting the fruit today. You know, one of my requirements is to cut this fruit, and it hasn't gotten any easier. Navigating this. Just yesterday, actually, the owner at it's 5 o'clock. He walks over to he's leaving with, you know, her, his secretary, you know, that my terrorist. And she went to go terrorize someone as they were walking toward the elevator. So he had to stop, and he walked over to where the fruit was at. And it was just tiny morsels, of course, at 5 o'clock. So I was taking something across the street to the other office and to get it signed and brought back or whatever. And so I get on the elevator with them. And he says, you know, Thomas, you know, I would love for you to maybe get a little bit more fruit because, you know, I just went to get some and there was none left. Oh, so him and her had the biggest argument on the elevator over. He's not getting any more fruit. I just stayed quiet, couldn't wait for the door to open. I got right away. See y'all tomorrow. And, you know, it was just for today. As I'm rinsing the fruit, one day I was, you know, this little squirt thing that if you have a water faucet, you have a little squirt gun that you the water comes out kind of spritzy. So I was cleaning, you know, using that to rinse the fruit. And I, you know, picked up the colander with the fruit in it and, you know, dried it out and put it on the tray. And just as I did that, she walked in. So the the wire or the cord was still, you know, out because I hadn't put it back yet. And she accused me of, now, because the thing was already loose, so now I'm the one that made that loose, and, you know, this is all your fault, look how you did that. So of all things today, I go to turn the water on, and the whole handle just came off. I did nothing other than just lift it up. Now, mind you, this is a kitchen that is being used in a office setting, but the faucet and everything is made for a house. It's not made for the wear and tear that it takes by the amount of people that, you know, office with, you know, about, I think it's 100 and something people just on this one floor. You know, it's either way, man, I had to do the dreadful thing of going to confess to her that this happened, and I knew it was coming, and come with me. This is all your fault. I mean, oh, my God, you know. And I just bit my tongue and, you know, took the lashing. And, you know, it is what it is. I mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate Thomas in New York. I'm sorry you had to experience that. That, you know, is exactly why so many black people have health problems and stress. Being fussed at about the fruit, even the being on the elevator and having the one race soldier, man, Thomas, sure would be great if you could get us a few more pieces of fruit. And then the other race soldier, I said, he's not going to get another raisin. And even having to be in witness of that, where you can do the wonderful thing of being silent, I'll let the racist duke it out, and my floor, peace out, like grand. But even that, I think, contributes to all that hypertension, just having to be exposed to that day in, day out, and the squabbling about the fruit all summer long. Had pause to get in a Welsing moment, the Grandcester, once again. Magnum ice cream bars, they are very expensive. Now, they have contraceptives that are called Magnum. And then they have the ice cream bars, which are infamously dipped in chocolate, the Grandcester, Dr. Welsing, but they had to have those, and I think those are generally known as being pretty expensive. But anyway, just anything to squabble and gripe over. You got the wrong ones, you didn't get the correct Nutty Buddies, and I'm upset about that. You didn't get the Haagen-Dazs, you didn't get the one with nuts in it. Any reason to squabble, fuss at a black person. And you know, in the wintertime, it'll be something else. We want, you know, roasted chestnuts or whatever it is for wintertime. Pumpkin lattes, that's coming up in autumn. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Irie.
Hello, good evening to you and everyone that's participating and listening. I wanted to start off by saying rest in power to Pam, because I've been doing the ride share driving so much, I have to catch up on archives sparsely, either at home or in between rides. And I found out what happened, and I was utterly surprised, but her work is going to live on forever. I really appreciate it. And I've even start educating my son on a lot of things like the interracial con game. So as far as workplace discrimination, doing the ride share in the past week, I changed my vehicle to a foreign luxury brand type of vehicle, because, you know, I just did the math and I could do it, and I knew I would generate more money by getting requests for what they call like the select or the premium rides. So what's been happening is when white people get into the car, they'll go, oh wow, this is nice. Or, wow, this is real leather, or something, I don't know, crazy talk, stupid talk like that. Because, you know, as you understood, it's going to be leather and it's going to be nice in here because it's a luxury brand vehicle. So then there's questions from them to qualify me having the vehicle in their mind, such as, so all you do is this, or do you work somewhere else full time? What do you do? And to quote Vivica Fox's character on Why Do Fools Fall in Love, my answer generally is, oh, you know, some of this, some of that, because frankly, you know, it's not their business. I picked up a passenger yesterday who wanted or was pretending to compliment me on my musical selection, because I always play jazz whenever people in the vehicle, Miles Davis, John Coltrane. And she goes, I like that music, Missy, which I do not take kindly to at all, because it reminds me of slave names like Missy, Prissy, stuff like that. You know, and also like something you would name a horse or some type of whatever. So I said, well, you can call me Renee, and thank you for, you know, your compliment. So after that, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. So moving on from that, school has started, and I substitute teach, and there was a discussion about like outer space exploration and also exploration on Earth. And I was telling the children about, okay, you know, there's a lot of things that happen that you're not told about because, you know, the government knows, people will freak out, or, you know, there'll be a commotion. So I said, imagine if you knew that there was a near Earth asteroid coming and you only had a week to live, what would you do? And some of the kids were like, well, I go shoplifting and I'd eat whatever I want. Well, this white young lady, and this is all eighth graders. She was saying, well, I'd act like it's the purge. And I was like, wow, you would. And then she goes, no, wait, I take that back. I said, well, listen, class, I said, that's your friend. And she just admitted if she had a week to live, she would murder people. So you need to watch her. And I thought that was fascinating. And I also thought it was fascinating how I attempted to greet some non-white permanent staff in the morning before the day started. And they didn't speak to me, but they did eyeball me pretty hard. I have a practice when I go into especially middle school and high school to wear business casual. And I don't know if they didn't take kindly to the fact that I had on a dress that was, you know, in that, like, you know, not casual, or if it was because, I don't know. I just don't know. But then later on, I was kind of challenged by one of the non-white teachers, Hispanic non-white. Oh, by the way, I'm in so-and-so, and let me know if you need help. And I just said, oh, okay, and walked on. And I think this is the last thing. Yes, this is. Also, if people could give me a little advice on what to do when a non-white or non-white children that are black, when they proceed to not have decorum in class, meaning laughing aloud, like this is what happened basically at the end of the day, laughing uncontrollably, purposefully ignoring me when I said, please turn around, thank you, we're doing this, can you join us, I'll help you if you need help, and there's, you know, typical eye rolling because they feel like they're being challenged, or not listening at all. There was one young lady that I said, listen, self-control is the best control. And right now you can't do that over there with your friends. I need you to leave. I need you to move. She's like, I'm not moving, because that's not something she said. I said, okay, well, now you have to go because you're about to cause, you know, confusion, and we can't have it. I'm trying to teach. So she's like, I'm not leaving. So I said, okay, you're right. You can stay here. I'm like, class, everybody get your stuff and we'll leave. And it did what I wanted it to do, which was she kind of acquiesced. She was like, oh, okay, all right, that's fine. I'm leaving because you're doing too much. And so it's like I'm trying to be cordial, or I am being cordial. I'm being polite. I'm calling them ma'am, sir, saying please and thank you. And some for some reason, you know, I guess racism, white supremacy has them confused when somebody is actually looking at them and being plaintive but firm at the same time. And it's like they're totally dismissing it. And I don't want to keep sending these kids to the office, you know, but then again, I don't know what else to do necessarily because I still have to attend to a whole class of other children who could really go astray if I let this one person stay, you know, and continue to disrupt. And I'll end my turn. Thank you.
I think that's the first time that Vivica A. Fox has been quoted on the cows in the 10 years of broadcasting. I think, well, one, what age group are these children?
8th grade, so between 12 and let's say 14, if they're on the older end.
Okay, 12 and 14. I think the system of white supremacy, I've worked with children in that age group, and I think a lot of the children that I worked with, I even worked with some in California, they have had really terrible experiences in the school system, as did I, and probably every black person on the line right now, I suspect. So they have a lot of that hostility, and especially that age group, because, I mean, by then they've seen, you know, a good 10 years of what the killing fields, as Minister Farrakhan calls them, what they look like, what that experience means being a black child. So, I mean, for some of them, you know, they're pretty frustrated about all of that at that point. So even from a black teacher who is attempting to be kind and all of that, they're still, you know, not receptive. I've seen that before. You know, I'm sure that the school, I'm sure they have a policy about what to do in that sort of situation. If you're supposed to just leave the classroom and leave the child there or whatever it is, I'm sure they have a policy in terms of what they encourage to be done. I think just being consistent, at least that's what I try to do, be consistent, be courteous, and just being consistent in terms of expecting that I'm going to be courteous with you, that you can be courteous with me as well. And that the expectation is that you'll be courteous with me and with other folks that are here. Like, even if you don't want to do something, that's fine. You can use your words to just say you don't want to do it. Like, you know, I don't want to do this, or I'm not in space to do this right now. That was a big part of what, you know, I tried to emphasize, being courteous with them and just understanding what's motivating that. And, you know, also at the same time, you know, holding them to those standards, consistently holding them to that standard that, hey, you know, you can being frustrated and all that is fine, but that is not grounds for you being discourteous to other folks here, like being consistent with the enforcement of that. Did other folks have suggestions on how to deal with that sort of environment? If you're teaching, it seemed like I know we have black educators who listen. If we have folks, I guess if you work with black children or if you're a black teacher, if you have any suggestions.
Excuse me, Gus. Yeah. Can I say one more thing? Sorry.
Let's get your one more thing.
Oh, just the language difference. I remember when I was in the military, they always looked at speaking a different language as the potential for mutiny. So I know a lot of times white people, when they feel like when you have a language that they are totally unfamiliar with, that it's not like they're afraid that you're plotting on them. So I would say that was another reason why she was having that type of negative feedback from speaking that language. That's all. Thank you.
Much obliged. The other caller, male caller who just spoke up, thank you for yielding the floor.
Yeah, that was me, Ken Steele. I'm calling from Los Angeles. And if I sound disappointed, I am. I just got scammed out of a few $100 by some Ukrainians, it appears. So I'm not in the happiest of moods right now. I just wanted to say that recently I had an experience at my workplace whereby, you know, I have a new code. I am not approving any any expenditures or any expenses that are suggested to me by a superior, I will allow them to take full responsibility for whatever decision that they choose to make. Recently, I was, blamed for the company that I was, that I'm working with. I was given a blame for an expenditure that was tens of thousands of dollars. Like I would never have lent my word to any of this had I not been encouraged to by my superior. And furthermore, you know, when the solution that we paid for, when it didn't pan out, every time it was referred to, as my suggestion or my project, when in reality, I had not been aware of this this program or this or any of this prior to my superior mentioning this and expressing a keen desire to have this solution integrated into our workflow process. So I guess I was the person who was in charge of, you know, reviewing and, you know, taking a look at the solution. And, you know, I said that it was a good solution. Objectively, it's a good solution, albeit very expensive. And so I said, sure. And months later, they're turning around and they're saying, your solution, your issue, your problem, you know, your program that you suggested is not working out, yada, yada, yada. And really, I'm suspecting that I'm being used as a scapegoat for this person's connections in Spain to go ahead and blame me for this blunder. And again, I didn't even know about the solution prior to it having been shown to me by the superior. And it's something that has me very upset. So not a good Thursday for Ken Steele over here. And I just got a number of fires to put out, it seems. And yes, I'm the only black person that is in the mix, so to speak. So I guess this is a game of blame a Negro, and I did. So I will go ahead and mute my line and see if I can scrounge up a few more coins to fix it. Thank you.
Sorry to hear about that, Mr. Steele. That is the intent of Racist Man, Racist Woman, to make sure that we all have lots of really sour Thursdays, unpleasant Fridays, grisly Saturdays. That is what they intend. We have any other folks who had commentary they wanted to get in as we get near the conclusion?
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh, Stacy from the UK joins us last minute, nearly 4 a.m. Friday morning, August 31st. Stacy in the UK.
Oh, thank you. Thank you to the other caller. I'm not sure who that was. Apologies, I've missed most of the program. And I did just hear Mr. Steele there. And it's a bit difficult now because you're obviously, it's that situation is now live, for want of a better term. My only suggestion now would be for you to detach yourself now emotionally. I know it's only just happened, so I completely understand why you're annoyed. But just because they're blaming you doesn't mean to say you have to take it on emotionally. And so be very neutral in your responses back and distance yourself, because that's what they do. You know, managers make decisions and then they try and blame somebody else. And I think, as you said, going forward, and this is for everybody else listening, just ensure that there is a an audit trail of decisions and recommendations going forward. But also, it's not your organisation, so you didn't approve anything in reality. In terms of my update, I'll try and be quick. I've been mentioning the BAME, Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic Network. No specific update on that network, but the black female who, for want of a better term, had been undermining me and carrying out the actions of HR for some time. She was also the person who heads up the gender network. And you may recall that I relayed a couple of months ago, that the BAME network was required to go through a formal structure and have their chairs and all the other people in the committee voted on. And then at the same time, they mentioned that they would also be reviewing the arrangements for the gender network. Now, this black female set this network up probably in about 2011, 2012, has been the only person who's been managing it. But since the focus on diversity, aka more white females in senior roles campaign, that situation has now changed. And I predicted that that would happen. I guess a suspected racist can be very shrewd, so they haven't kicked her off. But what they've done is they have brought in another female, white female. So it looks like, I only know this because I saw an update in the chief exec's, chief exec sends a briefing from senior managers, and there was a reference to a particular campaign that they're doing to put more women in senior roles. And reference these two people as the gender network. And never before has this other person, I don't even think she's been working for the organisation that long, been involved. So I can only imagine that this new person, who is a white female, is now the co-chair alongside the black female. So they're very shrewd. They haven't kicked her off because that would be too obvious. But there's now a co-chair, and how she was referenced in, or how they were both referenced, is that this white female's name was put first in the chief exec's briefing and the black female second. And it's a small detail, but I noticed it. And what, maybe no one else noticed it, but I predict soon that the black female will either get bored or they will exit her completely. But yeah, all of a sudden now that it's a big campaign, we need to have co-chair. I guess, as Mr. Fuller says, they can show you more better than I can tell you, or something like that. Because the time is running out, I guess I'm now still at 80% in terms of my overall code. But I think in terms of last week, I did introduce a new criteria, which is to be more courteous and show more consideration or compassion for non-white victims. I think I did give myself 60% last week, but I reviewed that, and I think I have to be more honest with myself and not practice self-deception. I think I'm more like 50%, but I'll mute my line there, Gus.
Love it. The self-evaluation, charity and criticism begin at home. Love it. Love it. Was that a codified software developer? Did you have commentary, ma'am?
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Ivy's question. Yes. That was me. I'll meet my line.
Great. Ivy, did you have a comment you wanted to?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gus.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Codify Software Developer. I wanted to say congratulations to Rob on your job. I hope that it's not too strenuous, because I know that you're still healing. and I wish you the best with that. Thank you so much, Stacy, for your concern for me. And, you know, some other people reached out to me as well about, you know, just grieving the loss of Pam. I want to say that, you know, I wasn't distraught over her passing, and I'm not distraught over it, but I am very sad, and I don't accept it. She should be here, in my view. What it is that I'm just a very emotional person. So if I'm sad, I'm going to sound distraught, and I'm going to, you know, cry a lot and things like that. So I'm okay, and I'm so grateful for everyone's concern. As far as the compassion for other victims that Stacy said to me, I believe it was last week. First of all, again, I thank you so much for your kind words with that. I'll say that, like, the Codify software developer, man, she's so much better at it than me. I mean, I even advised that she report someone who was mistreating her, a victim who was mistreating her on her job, and she refused to take it. She, you know, went and talked to him directly to avoid reporting him, as well as Gus. Gus is incredible at that. He's very protective of other victims. And I would say I'm just getting an understanding of the behavior and the logic behind it, that, you know, people are just, they're trying to survive. And to me, it's very logical that they, you know, would mistreat me or whoever else in order to survive, because, you know, homelessness is real and these terrorists are not playing out here. They don't have any qualms about seeing us homeless. In fact, they want to see that. And I understand that criticism. I'm trying to understand, at least I'm learning, that criticism is collective when it comes to Black people. So what you say, as Pam the Great said once, what you say about one of us, you say about all of us. So if I was to criticize, you know, another victim for whatever reason, that also applies to me. That's just how it is in this particular system. That's the way that white people have set things up. And also, you know, I want to solve the problem. And I know that in order to solve the problem, if I want other victims to stop mistreating me in order to survive or for whatever reason, I'm going to have to replace white supremacy with justice. And I'm going to have to look at the person who was behind them, because I can't keep looking at the people that they are paying or bribing or terrorizing or, you know, holding a job up to their head, which is the same thing as holding a gun up to their head, in order to solve the problem. I can't keep looking at the people that they're using. I have to look at the users, because if I keep looking at the people that they're using, I keep on going at them and going at them and going at them, and they'll just find more people. Well, it's more people for them to find than it is of them. So if I take care of them, they won't be able to find nobody no more. So I'm not really, it's best for me to worry about, instead of who is doing what, I need to be concerned about, okay, who's paying you to do this or bribing you or threatening you or whatever it might be. And so that was it. And I'll get my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, guys.
Much obliged, Ivy. Last 30 seconds. Do we have a caller who needs a comment or suggestion that can get in 30 seconds? Yes, sir. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Just really quick, Gus. That I think that was Ivy that was speaking. That reminded me of a quote, I think, Mr. Fuller. Yeah, says, I guess they could make them fast, and then they could be broken. What was that quote? Do you remember that?
He's given a lot of different variations of it, but yeah, that's basically the gist of it. They can make, talking about whatever name you want to put on them, Uncle Tom's or sellouts or whatever, but they can make them faster than you can break them or take them out or whatever. They can, as long as the system is here, it's easy to replace them. That was the gist of it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That will wrap us for this week's Neutralizing Workplace Racism. We'll be here tomorrow. Segment number one, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. Narrated by our COWS listeners, investors. That will be great. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Hopefully everything will flow smoothly. No technical issues. We shall see. Thanks for folks being patient, hanging in. A special thanks to Mr. Reed for working diligently to get us up and broadcasting so that folks could tune in online. Much obliged for the assistance, sir. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy this Thursday evening. Time, really value your time and energy. I cannot emphasize that enough for Black people, especially victims of white supremacy. Whites, they conspire in a variety of ways to have us waste our time and energy. If the tragedy of Pam's passing should remind us nothing else, none of us has an infinite amount of time. Value the time and energy that we have. Let's try to use it in the most constructive manner possible. And especially as victims of white supremacy, I mean, hey, we should be really urgent with our use of time towards getting this problem solved. We do not have time to waste. That's it. Certainly, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Let's do everything we can to preserve our health and our brain computers so that we can think clearly, come up with new concepts, solutions to permanently solve the problem. Whites, along with being sober each and every time we are in a vehicle, driver or passenger, let's be buckled up. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. I will pause. I'm going to have to say this on the compensatory call-in as well. Steve Silverman talked about this on the Cows. He's been a guest on the program twice, suspected racist. He operates the site Flex Your Rights. One bit of very constructive information that I got from Steve Silverman, suspected racist, is when stopped by enforcement officials, you say, "Sir, ma'am, I do not consent to searches of my person, my vehicle, my property without a warrant. I know you're just doing your job, but as a citizen, I don't consent." And I've said that to officers more than once, armed officers, plural, more than once, worked flawlessly. And I recommend that because and it's so many incidents of officers doing that nonsense. "Oh, you don't mind if I check around?" And they commence to pawn and all kinds of things can go bad. "I do not consent." It's right in the, and they have a documentary where they show this technique. I have heard from multiple listeners where whites, just not even, you know, a race soldier with a badge, just a random individual or individuals classified as white, showed up at their residence and knocked and they opened the door and they, you know, things went how they went. Sometimes these whites had guns, you know. And I said, wow, right in that same documentary, Steve Silverman, suspected racist, even if it's an enforcement official, if they show up to your residence and you did not call them, unless they have a warrant, you, by law, you do not even have to answer the door. You can go look at them through the peephole until they leave. And there's not, unless they have a warrant, if you didn't call them, if you want to just look at them through the peephole until they leave, if you look through the peephole and you see, oh, it's an enforcement officer, I didn't call them, and they're not announcing that they have a warrant. I mean, hey, if it's an enforcement officer and they have a warrant, they will make it clear. We have a warrant and we are coming in like, you know, 60 seconds. You have a limited amount of time to answer the door because we have this here piece of paper. They will announce and make it clear that they are coming through. But yeah, if you didn't call them and they don't have a warrant, they can ride. You can stay out there. You don't have to answer the door at all. And I have done that in my life and it worked perfectly, flawlessly. But that's what I would recommend. And the reason, once you open that, and 10 years of the Cows, what have I learned? We had Dr. Peggy McIntosh on the program in 2009. Spring of 2009, or actually it was August, right about now. It might be 9 years to the day, because it was really close. I'd have to look in the archives, but I mean, woo, we are really close to it being 9 years to the day. So Dr. Peggy McIntosh, white privilege knapsack, all that nonsense, suspected race soldier of the highest order. One constructive thing that she said on that program was about the Dr. Henry Louis Gates incident. Pam talked about that incident a lot, too. Dr. McIntosh, she said in that whole debacle where Dr. Gates, he was arrested at his house by the white race soldier. She said that that race soldier asked him to step outside and then put the handcuffs on him. This is in the archives. You can listen to this. She said what she learned was if he had stayed in the house, he would not have been arrested. He could have did whatever he wanted. He could have shouted at him, cursed at him, whatever, and then closed the door and went about his business. He asked him to step outside. Once he did so, then they put the cuffs on him. She said, that's what she learned. Stay in your house. I applied the exact same logic. They have those castle laws and everything for a reason. When you're in your house, you have a lot more authority, a lot more laws protecting you with regards to what you are obligated to do. You don't even have, I keep saying minimize contact. You can keep the door closed if any white person, even if they have a badge, unless they have a warrant, which they will announce, very rare that they have a warrant, it will not say anything, but unless they have a warrant, you don't even have to open the door. You can minimize contact and keep a boundary between you and the race soldier, badge or no. I think that is a much safer route to go because I've heard from a number of listeners who have had all these incidents that, you know, got potentially dangerous, where it, sometimes it wasn't just a white person on the other side of the door. It was an armed white person. Sometimes it was multiple armed white persons. Sometimes they had guns, no badge. You don't have to open the door at all. Once you open the door, oh my gosh, the probability of anything bad happening to you at that point has skyrocketed, as opposed to, I'll just keep the door closed and maybe I call the enforcement officials. Maybe I don't. Maybe, you know, a lot of different options you can take keeping the door closed. You got, I'll end here. We just heard you got whites who are salivating. If I knew I had a week to live, it would be time to purge. Context of white supremacy. Signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you're so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. A victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.